You know, I was 26, 27 years old. I had 100 employees. We were doing $10 million a year in revenues in Argentina and had no team for myself. I'm like, I'm producing like very impactful decisions every single day for my company and for my life. And I have no support whatsoever. This doesn't make any sense.
We got a fun one today with our guest, Ignacio Carcavallo.
I personally work nowadays with 8 coaches, mentors, and consultants in each of the most important areas of the life that I want to master somehow. 8 freaking coaches. Why? Because every time that I have a problem, a challenge, or you know something I want to achieve that I'm pushing limits all the time, I have my team, my personal board of 8 players that I consult with. Sometimes I even link them, and we produce a decision way faster.
Welcome to the Founders Journey Podcast. Inspiration, education for founders by founders. Welcome back, Founders Journey Podcast. Another episode, Peter. Good to see you on here.
Yeah, I'm excited to be back.
Got a fun one today, and with our guest Ignacio Carcavallo. Which he just pronounced it with an Italian pronunciation as opposed to an Argentinian pronunciation. I'm doing it like a Colorado pronunciation, so I'm butchering it all.
It's a mixture.
But we're thrilled to have Ignacio with us today. I've gotten to know him a little bit through some conversations that we have, and it seems like through our time together as both founders of EO chapters and things like that, our sort of worlds have circled around each other. So really thrilled that it's an incredible story. So. Ignacio is the founder of Argentina's largest Groupon competitor, so turned it into a big company. We're going to talk about that today. Now he lives in Los Angeles, and where he's really focusing on helping founders to really navigate crucial transitions, which, you know, if you spent one day as an entrepreneur, there's like a crucial transition every day. It's like if you can make it through the afternoon without a crucial transition, you're doing that. You're doing it. It's like record pace. So Ignacio, welcome to the podcast. Thrilled to have you here.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks, Peter, too, for the invitation.
Yeah, no, I'm thrilled.
Yeah, thanks. So why don't you start off by talking about you started a company in your native Argentina, became the largest competitor to Groupon, and what that journey was all about.
Yeah. So initially, I started working for AB InBev. Mm-hmm. I was 21 years old. I wanted to be the next CEO of, you know, the next big company, retail company. And man, I was wrong. I mean, I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur like 20 years in once I was able to be a CEO. And when I got into, I mean, I loved AB InBev, right? I have very treasure in my heart. But damn, I was not a corporate guy. So I did 3 years. I learned a lot. They were, you know, promoting me every 6 months. So I said, okay, I'm done. I cannot be a corporate guy. The lobby, the time needed in terms of execution. I was 23, 24 years old. So when I was around 25 years old, we got investment from Switzerland and Germany. So we started back in 2010. We went to become the largest group competitor in Argentina and Latin America. Also, we were partner and sister companies with other companies in Latin America. And it was almost a 10-year, 9.5 years experience. We sold in total $65 million with a maximum of 10 per year. That for Argentina is huge. It's like selling around $50 to $70 million in the US. Yeah, it's a very small country, only 40 to now it's 50 million population. We used to have 2 million users out of a 40 million population country. So it was, wow. It was huge. One every 20 people from the country were users of our platform. We employed maximum of 150 employees in 1 year. So in total, over the 9 years, we employed more than 700 people. We bought 2 of the largest competitors, one from the second largest newspaper of the country. So I was, you know, 32 years old. We were negotiating with the second largest newspaper in the country. It was like kind of crazy for us. And then we sold the company back in 2019, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, quite a journey.
Wow.
And you were 32 when you sold it?
34. I'm about to be 40 next year. Next week. like 30, not next year. 39.99. I think that it was 34, 35, something like that.
I mean, that's an extraordinary ride at that age, right? I mean, you reflect back on it for a second, right? And we're going to get into kind of what you're doing today too. But if you just sort of reflect back on it for a second, what did you learn? What were the biggest learnings you think that came out of that for you at that age?
Woo! I write daily on my LinkedIn about the learnings. Entrepreneurship is 90% perspiration and 10% inspiration. Ideas are worth shit, basically. It's mostly what you do with those ideas. That's why I was always very open on, you know, new ideas that I had.
What you're doing.
No, no, nobody can copy your execution. And if someone can execute 10 times better than you will, then it will eventually, you know, win the market. So I'm obsessed about execution in life in general. I love to make shit happen. And every single founder that I've met throughout my past almost 20 years of experience, the main thing that I've seen that that is what works in the equation is execution, perseverance, and passion. That's a combo. That's a combo that even when I look into investing into companies, the main thing that I want to see is the founder and how resilient, how perseverant, and how good is in execution in doing. Because as you said, you know, every single day is a freaking month in the entrepreneurial life.
Right.
So many things are happening. Some are planned, some are absolutely unplanned. And you have to be able to be absolutely and constantly making decisions, the important decisions. You know, they talk about decision fatigue. Well, you better not have decision fatigue as a founder because every single day you're producing and very meaningful decisions. You know, every decision is like, do I need to cut part of the team? Do I need to invest a shit ton of money? Do I need to sell my company for amounts that I've never seen before? Do I need to close this deal with a huge competitor? It's huge. And usually we don't have the past experience. Once you're seasoned or you have the right, as I call it, the personal board of A players, coaches, consultants, and mentors that can help you for your own organization, not only for the company, then it becomes a little bit easier, you know, to execute, you know, decision making. But when you're younger, there was so many months that I knew I was making huge decisions and I knew that I didn't have the experience. And I was thinking like, I'm not sure if I should go left or right. And that's when we started EO Argentina, you know, this entrepreneurial community, because I needed my community. I needed people. I needed mentors that I needed to talk to. Because even when I realized that I was relatively intelligent, relatively good at executing, many of those decisions had no previous experience and the impact was huge.
So you said for your own organization and your company, talk about the distinction because that's a really important thing you said. I don't want to get lost in there.
Absolutely. So it's interesting that, you know, when you talk to every founder, and I talk to founders every single day with, you know, right now I'm coaching and consulting, and it's very obvious that a founder needs to build their team of A players. You know, you want the best marketing guy or woman, the best sales guy, the best customer service. But then when you check their lives, and I treat my life as an organization, as a project, you know, as a company, whatever you want to call it, most of founders have no board for their own organization. They're absolutely alone, extremely lonely. I personally work nowadays with 8 coaches, mentors, and consultants in each of the most important areas of the life that I want to master somehow. I have my either coach, consultant, or mentor that I talk weekly, bi-weekly, or monthly for business, performance, hormones and biohacking, nutrition and weightlifting, spirituality, sexual intimacy, personal branding, and ontology, that is why I'm getting certified to be able to coach in the US. 8 freaking coaches. Why? Because every time that I have a problem, a challenge, or you know something I want to achieve that I'm pushing limits all the time, I have my team, my personal board of 8 players that I consult with. Sometimes I even link them, and we produce a decision way faster. Before, 10 years ago, it was absolutely alone. Mm-hmm. I had a great team below on the company, but not for my own organization.
We've got to go. Like, we got to go a layer deeper than that.
Yeah,
I mean that's honestly, it's the first time I've ever heard this on this podcast. It may be actually the first time I've ever heard this in general, and that almost like never happens on this, right? You built this. Basically, you've built a team of, you said 8, right? 8 coaches.
Yeah, 8 coaches. Sometimes 9, sometimes 7, depending on the month. Right now, we brought a ninth because we're working on, you know, very important things with my partner, my Jade, my fiance, and we brought a couple's council that we're going to be working for 4 months for the next stage. We want to get married. We want to, you know, have kids. We moved to the US many years ago. You know, we have some things that we want to master before we get into this, you know, very important stage of kids. So we brought this counselor, and we have our ninth coach.
So is this, are they rotating in and out? Are they like, what, I'm just fascinated by what does this structure look like?
Yeah.
Like, talk about this organization.
Yeah.
Your life organization, right? Exactly. What does the structure of that look like?
So the structure is like, as the company has its own areas and verticals, you have marketing, customer service, et cetera. Yeah. I have my own areas that I want to master. I want to master nutrition for myself, mm-hmm. right? Exercise, my hormones and, you know, personal well-being. My spirituality, etc. So I see that those as areas mm-hmm. of my company, my fiance, etc. Yeah. And I try to bring the best coaches, mentors, or consultants, or counselors from around the world that I can consult, depending on the schedule. Sometimes I have once a week, once every 2 weeks, or once a month, depending on, you know, the cadence of the mm-hmm. topic. Or the situation that I'm in. If I'm in the middle of an M&A, of course, with my business consultant, mm-hmm. I'm going to be working closely. Now I'm working closer to the intimacy part and the sexual part and the couples part, just because we're more focused on that. And many times we do meetings that we link two of those consultants because I want to produce a decision that has, you know, two sides. And usually when you talk to a business consultant, it's like business, business, business. When you talk to, you know, your own therapist or coach, it's like, no, you got to balance more and, you know, be more chilled. And, you know, so I link them and I tell them, okay, we have to produce a decision as an organization, because if not, everyone is in its own silo.
Right. Right.
So we create that team. Sometimes it's like my doctor and my coach. It's like, we want to push forward. You know, we want to accelerate the growth of this year, but I need more support on this side. And it's way easier to produce results, decisions constantly, and, you know, decide on the changes that we want to go forward, so that the team is usually integrated. And I feel absolutely supported. The same way as you're a solopreneur versus having a huge team below you, it's like, oh, great that, you know, I don't need to be the most expert guy in marketing, in sales, in customer service. You just hire the best that you can, either external consultants or inner team. So you don't need to be the best in marketing, the best in sales. You just delegate. So I'm not the best in spirituality. I'm not the best in sexual intimacy. And I'm the best in personal branding. I have my own coaches, consultants, and mentors that I can consult in a regular basis, so that my life organization or company is also thriving the same as my personal companies.
You know, when you talk about founders, right, one of the biggest challenges, I think you probably see it all the time with founders as well, is, you know, they struggle with asking for help, right? And what you're talking about is the exact opposite. I mean, you couldn't get more opposite, you know, from what you're talking about, right? Where it is literally the other extreme from the founder, that loneliness, I'm carrying the burden of the world on my shoulders. No one understands me. I have no help. I'm trying to do this all on my own, right?
When I'm in front of people that love, I say that's the stupidest mindset that you can have as a founder. It's the same mindset as you would say, like, no, I should never, you know, hire employees. I have to do marketing. I have to do sales. I have to do finances. Sure, if you want to be a solopreneur, if you want to be a freelancer, then you may. If you want to build a sustainable company that thrives over time and scales, there's no freaking chance that you can do it all by yourself.
Yeah.
Are you stupid or weak just to get help from a marketing guy, from a sales guy?
Right.
No, of course not. You're building your team.
Right.
But for some ego reason, most people don't do that for their own life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you really think that you're the best in sexuality, the best in as a doctor, the best nutritionist, the best weight maker? Of course not. It's obvious. Mm-hmm. But it's easier to see it on a doctor rather than on experts on other fields.
How did you get to that realization? Was it part of your journey that helped you learn that? And what was that
lonely
like?
AF.
Yeah.
Say that again. You were what?
I was lonely AF.
you can say as fuck on the podcast.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
I was lonely as fuck.
In your journey as a founder, you were that way. Okay. Oh,
absolutely. Because here's the thing. You know, we had very big shot investors from early stage Skype and Facebook. But then after 1 or 2 years, we did a management buyout. Because some other countries, you know, like Brazil or Australia, were growing way more than Argentina. So there was an opportunity for us to do the management buyout. But then we didn't have any more of those, you know, that smart money that was teaching us and helping us. My co-founder, amazing guy, I love him, but he wasn't my boss. So I was learning as, you know, as a co-founder. And, you know, my father comes from an education. So I wasn't learning that much. I don't have any older brothers. You know, I was very lonely, and I was 26, 27 years old. I had 100 employees. We were doing $10 million a year in revenues in Argentina, and I had no team for myself. I'm like, I'm producing like very impactful decisions every single day for my company and for my life, and I have no support whatsoever. This doesn't make any sense.
Right.
It's like giving a junior guy a huge P&L and tell him like, okay, you know, go handle the P&L. Makes no sense. You need a CPA or a finance consultant in order to learn. So I saw that as my whole life and organization. And I said, okay, this doesn't make any sense. It's like, imagine tomorrow you will be the president of the United States and you have no consultants, no advisors. You got to deal with yourself. You would say like, this is freaking mental.
Right.
I can't deal with that whole country. You know, you got a huge team of consultants. It's obvious. So for me, it was as that obvious for my own life and company. So I started creating teams. I said, okay, you know, we co-founded EO Argentina. Okay, I have my entrepreneurial community. I need a business mentor. So I went to EO. I got, you know, it was a guy that I really admire. I said, I want you to be my mentor. I will also mentor other folks, you know, to give back. And then, I started with a coach. Then I started seeing another doctor. And then I went for performance. Then I started developing my spirituality, meditation, Buddhism. So I said, I need a master something, you know, but this is too big for me. Mm-hmm. So slowly and steady, I started building my own team. And that's why nowadays I have, you know, this amazing team. I'm super supported. And, you know, because I'm pushing my limits on every single area of life, like relationships, my personal life, I'm moving through countries or sometimes continents. We used to live in Indonesia 5 years ago. You know, so many things we're trying to achieve. That now everything that I need to solve, I just go to the team, you know, produce a decision and execute. It's not that it's easy, but it's way easier than having to figure out myself.
Right. There's a huge amount of personal accountability in that. You know, because I think it is, and certainly I've been there. I still continue to get there occasionally, right? Where you fall into that rut of, you know, I'm alone, right? I don't have anybody to help me. When I think, you know, what's powerful about what you're saying is that's just bullshit. Like, you're doing it to yourself, right? If that's where you are, look around. There's a world of people willing to help you. So if you don't take advantage of it, that's on you.
You see that I've been developing my online branding and my personal branding for 2 years. You know, that's usually, you know, my best lead generation strategy, where people know what I'm doing. You know, they contact me and we start working. I was doing Instagram. I was doing short form reels. It wasn't working that much. I mean, because I was running ads, I wasn't putting so much attention on the content. I was just doing it to be there, but it wasn't high quality. It wasn't working. Then the ads stopped working. And I got into a crisis because, you know, the online branding wasn't working. What did I do? I went to Matt Gray, one of the best, around personal branding. He became my mentor. Now I'm part of a mastermind. I'm learning a lot from him. Done. Switched to LinkedIn. Past 6 months, I've been growing my following a lot. I've done like multiple six, almost seven figures in deals. And I went to an expert. The guy has, you know, built a community for millions of followers in 1 year. He's a freaking expert. I'm less than a 10th or a 20th of his knowledge. Easy. I go to the guy.
Right.
Yes. I don't need to figure out by myself. Like, I already have to figure out by myself so many things. Like, make myself easier. I would say, I mean, with doctors, it's very easy. If you break a bone in half and you have like an exposed fracture, would you be like, okay, today I'm going to walk slowly and then next week I'm going to put a bandage? No, you go to a freaking doctor. It's easy.
Well,
you're making it harder than it needs to be. It's already hard.
I have a feeling that Peter and I are both laughing at the exact same thing, which is it's so funny, right? Because you say it is so absolutely obvious, right? What you're saying, and it's also so profound at the exact same time, right? It is, there is nothing about what you're saying that isn't completely obvious, completely true, will work 100% of the time.
And yet.
That's right. And yet we will wander around in circles fucking endlessly, right?
Sleepless nights, insomnia.
Nonstop. And just not do it. So we've been talking about yourself, right? We've been talking about how this has been your journey, but you're coaching now and you're talking about helping founders navigate crucial transitions. How do you apply this to them? How do you take these lessons that you've learned and impart this knowledge into your coaching?
Luckily, I've been doing this for 2 years. I have more than 350 sessions with founders. I have 100% success rate. And people are like absolutely mind blown because suddenly I become what I call an unbiased partner. Suddenly you have a business partner and also a life partner in the case that has no bias, that knows, you know, what you are going through and what you will be going through. And my only goal is your success. I mean, the only way that I can be successful is because you are being successful. So they're absolutely mind blown because they have been working on so many areas and topics by themselves. And many of my clients, I am employing my own consultants or coaches. You know, let's say that, you know, you start scaling your company. It works better. Now you realize that you have a problem with your marriage. I start doing some coaching, but of course my limitation is very obvious. If, you know, you have 2 kids, you've been married for 15 years, I plug the couple's therapist. And then you start working on your hormones and, you know, I can help you sleep better and do some hygiene. But of course, I'm not a health expert. So I plug in my hormones doctor and suddenly you start having my own personal board and you start seeing that your life is so much easier. Mm-hmm. Same as if you were completely alone in your company and you start hiring the marketing guy, the sales guy, and you have a team. It's so obvious that the company is going to grow. It's easier. You can delegate. So the way that we work is, you know, I specialize in crucial transitions. Mm-hmm. Yes, a founder that is scaling and moving usually is usually constantly in a crucial transition. But, you know, there are some crucial transitions. And what I've seen is that, you know, I talk about natural confidence and ease. And the concept that I'm developing, kind of like trademark natural confidence, means that I only partner up with high-performing founders. High-performing founders, of course, are confident. Some of the people are shy. They, you know, they shy about execution. They have achieved great stuff. But something has happened right now in this crucial transition that their confidence and their clarity is affected. Why is this? Because this comes from the book Flow in Business from Mihaly 60-something. Sorry, I don't know that. I remember this name. When the challenge level is too high versus your skill set, it creates a huge anxiety and imposter syndrome. That's where imposter syndrome comes. It's not that you're stupid. It's not that you're an imposter. But the challenge level that you're right now versus your current skill set creates the lack of confidence, the imposter syndrome, and the lack of clarity. So I become this skills accelerator and support to help you bridge that gap so that you are able now with extra resources and support to navigate this challenge. So for example, you had a thriving business, the pandemic hit, things like stores are closed, the whole world is upside down. Suddenly it's a completely unknown challenge where usually many people didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. So by having this team of support, it's easier to develop action plans and to give you the skills that you need to bridge that gap and feel again that confidence, that natural confidence that a founder has, have absolute clarity, because I've seen that usually founders, when they have clarity, nobody can stop them. Like, you know, they execute like crazy, but man, when we don't have clarity on what to do, oh, we dread the decision. It can take weeks or months. We pay huge cost. We don't sleep. Should I do this or that? But what if this and what if that? It's terrible. And with one session, we can absolute determined and have crystal clear clarity on what to do so that then you can go and execute. And that's when the ease part comes. We start creating action plans. You start being supported. I give you all the tools and resources that you need. And suddenly that huge, like very difficult problem or challenge that you were facing, it's just one more thing. You have a clear action plan. And then we start executing during the months. And you know that every single week or month, you have an unbiased partner that will work with you, that is supporting you along the way. And every time that you feel stuck or there's an obstacle because, you know, you execute, something happens, MVP style. You know, you have to iterate. You have something to work with, someone to work with that understands what you're going through and that has some extra tools. Easy. Same as with a doctor. You start a plan, you start a medicine, then it works, it doesn't work, you adjust. Eventually, you get rid of the disease. Easy. Sounds easy. Of course, easier said than done.
Yeah, that's crazy. So reflecting on your journey as a founder, what decisions or actions did you make that really determine the outcomes of your business and your founder journey?
Okay.
I think so one of them you kind of answered for us, but.
There was, I think that the toughest decision, and this brought tinnitus for my co-founder and I, you know, the ear buzzing maybe for our whole time, our lifetime, is that 2015, we had bought two of the largest competitors with 6 months of difference. It was huge. It was our first M&As. We did two in 1 year. With one, we brought in 25 employees. With another one, we brought like 50 employees. So we were 150 employees, three cultures, kind of like three companies in one. It was crazy. We were doing $10 million in revenues. We had a technical problem. And suddenly, even when we were improving our office because we were absolutely jammed, we lost 50% of sales almost overnight. For like two months, we were like in the war room with my co-founders saying like, the heck are we going to do? It was very difficult to turn around. It was, you know, our IPs were banned in Hotmail and we were very reliant on newsletters. Wow. 65% of our newsletter, our revenues came from newsletters. We were sending a billion emails per month. So, you know, it was a very intensive operation.
Yeah.
And we went to, you know, a very good friend from EO, someone, an entrepreneur that I respect a lot. And we did an immense strategy session. And he told us, you have right now an elephant, like a Titanic that is sinking. And if you don't cut 75% of the costs and the people, you're going to die. This is like signed. And we were like, what the heck are you talking about? We just bought the companies. We just hired the people. My worst nightmare ever. Mm-hmm. And of course, we were like very into people, like core values, you know.
Right.
In Argentina, like we paid all our salaries in white. We're all correctly registered. That for Latin American countries, you know, there's a lot of informality. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I need to, let go 100 people. That this is freaking mental for me. I couldn't even understand. But after a long discussion with my co-founder, we said, you know, if we want this company to thrive and to survive, we need to take care of the other 50 families that we have. Mm-hmm. So we made, for me, that was the hardest decision. And then it was the hardest decision for 9 months because over 9 months we had to negotiate. We didn't have the money. So we had to negotiate one-to-one with each person. A lot of tension, a lot of crisis, losses, you name it. The worst 9 years, there was 9 months of my professional life. We both developed tinnitus. We had insomnia, gastritis, you name it. And then next year we were 45. We had worked on our core purpose, our values. We implemented EOS. We had amazing people completely aligned. We got back to $10 million, but with a third of the team. It was the best year of our professional life. But man, it was hard. And it was that day that we decided to, you know, start this cutting plan that was violent for us. Violent, and of course, for the people.
That's it's those kind of decisions, right? That, I mean, it's that one decision that you have to make that is so brutal. You know, I think so many of us who have built, I know Peter's been there, I've been there, and those things. But, you know, you kind of get to the other side, you look at it, and it's like, oh my God, had I not done that? Like, what kind of a disaster? Well, you just wouldn't be there, right? You just wouldn't be there. And, you know, so I want to change the question a little bit, right, on it. So if you think about your own journey, because that was a really big decision that you had to make. But so many founders spend so much time, and you alluded to this before, worrying about shit that never actually happens, right? So if you kind of think about your own journey, like, what's the biggest thing you think that you sort of spent time agonizing about that in retrospect, it didn't actually matter at all, right?
Going bankrupt.
That was your worry?
I think like for 9 years, every single day.
Yeah.
Because it was a huge company, $10 million in revenues, but of course, like less more margin, huge overhead. We had like 100 to 150 employees, no service-based company. But you know, I did some investing over the past years in the stock market and in crypto, and they tell you the day, you know, there's a good phrase, the day that you stop worrying is the day that you lose your investment, because you got to be paranoid and worried for the market in order to be up to the news and, you know, the movements and, you know, investments and everything. So I think it's kind of like a double-edged sword. On one case, on one side, you know, it's real. The first 5 years, the first 7 years, depending on the size of a company, it's still a baby. It's the company's still a baby or a toddler. Mm-hmm. It can die almost any time. Like there, almost any disease out there can be fatal. Mm-hmm. And there's so many diseases potentially for the company. So it's a mixture between like being worried because, of course, money was tight and cash flow was tight. Sure. But on the other side, you're a little bit more defensive and, you know, you're checking all the potential scenarios to avoid that. And the reality is that, you know, the statistics, more than 80% of the companies go bankrupt in the first 2 years. And then 80% of the rest of those 20% of the companies left go also bankrupt over the next 2 or 3 years. So the reality is that the probability of having a successful company over 5 or 10 years is extremely low.
Yeah.
So you're not being paranoid. You're being actually realistic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is it healthy? Was that worry healthy then?
So what I've seen is that by creating these teams of consultants and coaches and stuff, it reduces the anxiety and you can plan more ahead. Because if not, it's like you're worrying, you have no, sometimes you have no, not much experience. So you go through an M&A, you don't have any good experience on an M&A. You go through, you know, a downside of the company, you don't have previous experience. So of course, some kind of, you know, attention to the potential problem is important, but the extreme sense that we really feel that we're going to die every single day with a company, especially the first years, can be mitigated by having a great team of consultants. And sometimes if you don't have the budget, you can ask, you know, you can always find mentors that are going to be willing to give you a hand. And if you can pay for them, I try to pay for the best around the world. I've seen that reduces drastically because suddenly, you know, you go to someone that has had this experience, they paint you the picture, tell you, no, this can happen. Or if you're afraid of this, these are all the things that you could do, or I can present you with someone that can fix this problem. So suddenly you feel more supported, because if not, you feel that there's no safety net.
Right.
There's no safety net, then's where the anxiety kicks in.
There's an interesting exercise that somebody taught me not long ago, probably about a year ago. I don't know if you've ever used this or anything before, but where this person who explained it to me is like, they explained it as the evening worry dump, right? I don't know if you've ever heard of this before, but it's like, it's a really inarticulate way of saying it. But it's basically like actually physically before you're going to bed at night to write down the stuff, right? Write down the worries, take them out of your head, put them on a piece of paper.
Yeah, brain dump.
That's right. And if night after night, and it really is amazing when you do this for several weeks, it's the same stuff, right? Over and over and over. You're just ruminating on the exact same thing. And the advice was, look, if you see those things appearing, sometimes it just appears and disappears and it's because something happened that day or whatever. That's fine, right? But that stuff that is showing up day after day after day after day, that's where you need the support. That's where there's a trauma. That's where there's a fear. That's where there's whatever it is, right? That's where you need to then start to target. I don't always do it, and I get in spurts where I do it for, you know, a couple months and I kind of stop and forget or whatever. But it's enormously powerful when you start to think about those constant, you know, those worries that just don't go away.
Yeah. I mean, with my clients, I use what we call, like, this comes from EO, the parking lot.
Yeah.
I tell them,
yeah, exactly.
Every time that you feel that there's something repetitive, that you'd like to have a breakthrough, you have to have clarity, you have confidence, you would like to make a decision plan, you would like to make an advancement, write it down in the parking lot.
Right.
It's a brain dump. You take it out of your system, and you know that you'll have the space to support it, have that support. And they know that with one session, we solve it. We have an action plan. They have clarity. They have confidence. So it's easy. Now you have a place to get it out of your mind, and you have a place to address it also, because you're not evading it as well. So,
well, and you're also not forcing. I think the power in that too, and you know, being, I mean, I was, you and I talked about this before. I was an EO member for 15 years, YPO member for a bunch more. I am not 39.99 years old. I think that the power in that parking lot, right, is also, you don't have to solve it right now. Just get it out of your head, right? Because I think the other, and I was like freaking worst when it came to this. Like, if it was in my head, I had to solve it right now. Like, it had to be done, because I was going to forget, or it was going to get worse or whatever. So like, needed to be handled right now. And by doing that, by taking it out, it's the same thing as that kind of evening brain dump, right? By taking it out, you're seeing it. It's there. It's memorialized now. Yep. I'm going to go solve it, but I don't have to do it this second.
It's relatively similar to the calendar. If I tell you, okay, no, on Tuesday, you're going to have this meeting. On Wednesday, you're going to have this meeting at 10 a.m. Remember, your mind's going to be, oh my God, I need to remember all these things.
Right.
Put it on the calendar. You know it's there. Easy. And you will address it when the time comes. So I'm not saying that just by, you know, writing it down, the problem will disappear. But you're telling the brain, hey, we got you. You don't need to remember this constantly. I got you. It's printed here. And then next week, we're going to have a setting where you can address this. So all good. Like, all is well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it really reduces by, like, let's say 80% the times that it's repeated. Because most of the times that it's repeated is because you think that you're going to forget, or you don't know when are you going to solve it. But when you have a plan, you have certainty.
Yeah.
We have one question that we like to ask, but I'm going to change it a little bit for you, because I think you answered it. So, and we usually ask, like, what actions or decisions you wish you had made back before. Yep. Do you think when you were going through that moment you described, if you had more of your full team that you have today that you developed over time, that would have changed how you felt or the outcomes of what happened to you personally as a person?
My selling point on my company nowadays with coaching and consulting is, if I could only coach myself 10 or 15 years ago, then my life would have been so much better.
But you needed someone like you, is your point. Like, you.
Yeah. And I, you know, it brings me so much joy when some people come with some maybe less age or less experience on so many things. And I see myself represented, you know, 10, 15 years ago, five years ago, and I'm able to help them, and they, you know, avoid all the mistakes that I made. It's kind of like healing, you know?
Yeah.
I can impact them. So, of course. And for example, if I had a great business consultant when we had the first offer for a company that we didn't accept, the main problem was, you know, was a bigger offer than the last one that we sold. And because we had gone through this terrible experience, we turned the ship around. Now we were doing $10 million with 45 people, super aligned, We said, no, now the company, we went through the worst hell. Now the company's worth way more. And we had a great offer from a great party. And we said, no, we're good. And we weren't focusing on the macro, and the country was, you know, starting to do really bad. And then the past five or eight years have been like terrible. Last year, we went the number one podium in the world of inflation, 270%, number one in the world. So imagine like where it was going to. And I wish I would have sold back then. And we were greedy, same as with the investing. We got greedy. We thought that we could do way better, and now I regret. And many times that, you know, clients come and they have a really good offer and they get greedy, I share my experience, and I'm not saying that they should sell, but I try to paint the picture of my own experience to really assess if this is a good offer, and depends if they want to sell, they should, versus, no, I just want more.
Yeah.
and maybe they're burnt out. They don't really want to you know, continue with the company. Mm-hmm. So we really understand if they actually are not willing to sell right now, because then you pay huge costs. Yeah. Even when you stay and you have a better valuation, it really, you have to really see on how much stamina have you got, because usually we predict the future by seeing the past events, and that's a flaw in an entrepreneurial world. Yes, mm-hmm. you have more experience, but you may be more burnt out with this business, with your co-founder, with the business model, and maybe the way that you were hustling and executing the past 4 years may not be the same way that you will execute the next 4 years. Right. Maybe it's better, but you need to assess that.
And that's where that transition starts, right? I mean, that's where, that's that point of transition to figure out, you know, what is maybe, you know, I think a lot of times, and I know, you know, this, I exited my last company in 2020 and stayed on as the CEO for about 18 months. And I know, you know, a lot of times you're just kind of hanging around the hoop, right? Because you don't know what else to do. And I think, you know, that becomes in itself, right? It's that transition that if you can start to think about those things a little bit in advance, right? Maybe just having that little bit of a plan.
It's the most important decisions that you're doing in your whole life. Why on earth would you do them alone?
Right, right. That is a perfect way to end this, Ignacio. I think this was super. I mean, look, Peter and I are unbelievably blessed because we get to do these interviews all the time with people like myself. And we talk about all the time that like the most fun part of doing this podcast has nothing to do with like other people listening or something. This is just our excuse to talk to really amazing people. Like, that's it. Like, we could do this without recording it. It'd be just as cool. But this is really, it's really what you're talking about today is super unique. And I think enormously valuable. So thanks for sharing it. If you don't follow Ignacio on LinkedIn, there are a few people out there that I would say this about, but it's a handful, and Ignacio's at the top of this list. He is an absolute must follow if you're a founder, entrepreneur. And we'll stick the link on LinkedIn at any other social. Otherwise, how else do people reach you if they want to talk to you about coaching, anything like that?
LinkedIn is my main social media nowadays. I mean, Instagram also, some others, but LinkedIn is the main.
Got it. And so just hit you through DM if they want more information on LinkedIn.
Yeah, my team is there with my DM. So
cool.
Cool. Wow. I have to say one thing. Greg used to fill like three of your slots that you had for. I just fired him for two. As my friend mentor, like he filled kind of three of what you ate.
All right.
I think we'll have to have this discussion later, but I think I'm going to have to go find a couple more people.
You may not, though, say which ones. That,
I won't. This is
at least not.
You, I think that you're meeting me.
Because there were a couple. I'm not sure I'm the.
I know.
Yeah. So, well, we're just going to leave
more
it at.
Help.
We'll leave it at you can figure out which ones those are, but it's not.
We did couples counseling with my co-founder for 1 year.
Yeah. Also.
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah.
Amazing. Well, that is
so cool.
This is awesome, Ignacio. Thanks so much for joining us. If you liked the episode, as always, if you're listening, you liked it, share it, like it, comment, we're at whatever platform you're listening on, and help us continue to, and write a review if you haven't done that, and just so we can continue to push this out there. So thanks again. We'll see you on the next edition of the Founders Journey podcast.